Hello everyone and welcome to Negotiating Ideas, a podcast about political thought on democracy, pluralism, and peace. My name is Omer Sadr and I'm Senior Research Scholar at the University of Pittsburgh Center for Governance and Markets. In this episode, I chat with Halima Kazem, who is a postdoc fellow at the University of California, Santa Cruz, and manager of the Oral History Project at Hoover Institution, Stanford, where she conducts interview and collects data on the fall of Republic of Afghanistan. In this conversation, we discuss women's activism and resistance in Afghanistan, how women have projected their agency, and some of the key challenges that women face in their struggle against the gender apartheid regime of the Taliban. Halima also talks about her role and activism in the movement, which is also known for Non-Kar Azadi, their slogan, translated in English as Bread, Work, and Freedom. I hope you enjoy the conversation. On to the podcast.
All right, so I will not take more of your time. Let's jump on to the interview. I have a short question.
Sure.
This will be on your research, probably, what you do on women as a part of it. I don't know, how do you see yourself as a part of the movement? Do you consider yourself contributing to the movement, or you're an outsider as a researcher, you're just studying them?
I think it's rooted in my feminist methodologies and feminist work that we don't exploit communities. You are integrated into communities, and that advocacy becomes a big part of scholarly work. And so I don't see myself outside, but I also, it would be wrong to see myself as completely inside. I see myself as a support, support system, sometimes as a conduit for information that helps movements inside.
How do you make sense of the movement itself and some of the key characteristics if you have observed it since 2021 or August, since the inception of it? What are the key, for example, trends or characteristics that you might highlight for this movement?
So I wouldn't call it one movement. I think that there are always multiple parts to a movement, if not to say many movements. And how are movements defined? And I think we have to keep that in mind. What do we mean by movements? Is it more than one person is a movement? Multiple groups coming together? So I think that this period still needs to be understood in how what terms, what parameters, and how we're defining movement.
Yeah, because there are divisions within the women movements. I have come across multiple groups, at least virtually, the way that they define themselves. But that is also somehow deeper, representing different kind of aspirations, different form of desires or political motions that they put forward. Do you see that the visions are really deep there, or you do not consider the vision so critical to the movement?
So there are different kinds of divisions in Afghanistan. You have these diaspora movements, if you want to call, if we're going to use the word movement or groups at this point, as part of a larger structure or movement. So we've got these diaspora groups, and then we've got the groups. So we've got multiple groups in the diaspora, ones who've been outside in the diaspora for many decades. And then you've got the diaspora movements, the diaspora groups and individuals who recently left, meaning in the last 2 years since the fall of the Republic, who still feel very much representative of the Afghan women inside, who still feel very strongly. So that's like almost a research on its own in how these different categories of diasporas really view themselves in relation to the movements inside. And then you have the movements inside. And even in within those movements inside, you have your, obviously always have a rural-urban divide, but you also have a an ethnic linguistic divide too. You have a privileged group that is a bit more quiet, and then you have very underprivileged target groups that are targeted who are very vocal and need to be for their own survival. So I think not looking at it as one movement, looking at it as how the ecosystem of movements or the structure of this place we're in, this moment we're in, or this period that we're in. I think it's probably important to look at it that way.
In terms of support, you said you look at yourself as a not main component or actor of the movement, but a support. Is it exclusively in terms of research, or do you wear as multiple hats in terms of support? And for example, advocacy, which is not necessarily part of your research. Are you part of those kind of initiatives as well?
Yes. And in that feminist training that I have, because that's what my PhD is in, and it's interdisciplinary, that advocacy becomes central to the research. And so everything from, you know, collecting and sending money for women who put themselves on the line inside and now are being targeted because of that, the new front line, as we call them, or the continuous movement of front lines. You know, and so raising money, being part of groups where we're meeting with, I'm part of Together Stronger, which might be a group that your wife might want to be introduced to or look at, where Afghan women all over the globe inside Afghanistan and in the diaspora, and some non-Afghan women. And so we lobby, you know, various envoys and ambassadors and governments, and write letters and support initiatives and fundraise, hold meetings and, you know, all sorts of campaigns. So that would be a big part of the advocacy work that I do.
How do you see agency of women in the movement in terms of appropriating certain tools which might be available to them, or they might endeavor to have them, in terms of shaping the movement itself? I spoke with people who deny agency of women and say that women, primarily those who are in Afghanistan, are the diaspora. The فارسی هم بسیار زیاد چی هست یک لیبل که برشان میزنم که این زن هست که میخواین خارج برن
کسایی که داخل افغانستان هستن
the social movement, the protestants in Kabul, for example, or the northern provinces. So a group of people completely deny agency of women, saying that, well, someone told me interestingly that these are the women or girls who immigrated from Instagram to Twitter. They didn't know even
from what?
From Instagram to Twitter. So basically they were just fancy ladies clicking pictures, busy with their own life, didn't have any kind of political cognition.
In Afghanistan.
Yeah. I'm talking about the ones who are in Afghanistan, or in the last 2 years they were protesting. Now some of them are out of the country. But my question is, how do you see agency of the woman in terms of shaping the narrative of the movement? So here we are talking about insiders, not diaspora.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So it's like the way I see it is almost I don't like to use a military metaphor, but in a militaristic way in some ways, where the women who were there, who left after the collapse of the Republic, in many ways were the front lines, right? And there were these groups behind them who were not in the spotlight, who didn't have the privileges and the opportunities at that time. And so when the group left, or the groups of women left after the fall, there were these lines in the back that have moved forward. And that's natural, I think, progression of when leaders move out, new leaders emerge. And so you can see it one way as they're emerging because they want to gain visibility in order to be recognized and leave the country. But that process of emerging also has possibilities, right? The move forward, they're not certain that if they go on a hunger strike or if they go protest outside or they put some things up on social media, that they're going to be safe. Why do we discount that potential of emerging? Mostly because they're women. And I think women have been the most active on the streets than any other group. And during the time of the Taliban, they have the most to lose. If they don't, they have the most to lose if they do. And so when we talk about agency, I think there's misogyny and discrimination in how we define agency. And so we need to look at the minor actions and think about the political consciousness that develops, that has developed within these groups in the last 2 weeks, and what it takes to move up to the front line. I think those are some things to think about.
True, true. Now, in terms of future plan for yourself, both as an academic and the other angle that you have as an advocate, how do you see yourself in next, let's say, this is a longer process of struggle. We don't know how long it will last, 1 year or probably 5 years or a decade. For a long term, how do you see yourself? How do you place yourself in terms of supporting, planning, visioning, or whatever?
I will still be involved. I was involved. I've been involved for 25, 30 years. And I remember during the first time of the Taliban, the first regime, and all of the conferences and discussions about gender apartheid, I attended those. Those are those first years that, you know, the Feminist Majority Foundation in the diaspora, of course,
and the moving
in the U.S. I mean, that's the Feminist Majority Foundation actually created the campaign against gender apartheid. And I was in my early 20s. I attended then. I followed through with the research and sticking with the women's issues. And during the time of the Republic, really spent quite a bit of time. So I will continue to stay on. This is an incredibly sad in many ways, but an incredible moment for gender empowerment and women's rights, an incredible test internationally, and an incredible moment. So, and the women now are very different. Most of the women, especially on the front lines and the ones in the 90s, they've seen a whole different side of life in the world. Their expectations have gone. The Afghans, I think, in Afghanistan, this time around under the Taliban, are very different from the Afghans who lived at that time. Everything is cyclical in Afghanistan, you know, and everywhere too, in our history as well. And I think that the situation will be different, hopefully sooner than it was last time. And so it's amazing to see the role that women will play and the way that their roles will be documented in this historical period.
In 90s, you were in 20s, but do you recall any other major woman activists of 90s who are still alive and they continue to be the part of the movement?
So I remember Sima Wali. Unfortunately, she passed away. In my dissertation, I document some of the women from the 90s. Sima Wali was a powerhouse. You can probably look up some of her speeches at that time. There were diaspora publications, very specifically Omaid.
Yeah.
Omaid Weekly. Uh-huh. I think my father has the whole collection. He was just telling me I should archive it here at Stanford. But the women who were active during that time in the 90s within the Afghan diaspora and in the international community would also write for these publications. So that might be an archive to look through and see what the women were writing at the time.
Omaid was published in Virginia, I suppose, right? Am I right?
Yes, I believe so. And my father used to write for Omaid all the time.
Okay. Now, In terms of weaknesses, how do you see some of the major weaknesses of the movement that those should be addressed immediately by the activists or by those who are in a larger network of support?
I may not frame them as, for inside Afghanistan, I wouldn't frame them as weaknesses. I'd probably frame them as challenges
or
that the women, as the women have, is just the deep sense of insecurity.
Yeah.
The deep sense of fear and no accountability for anything that happens. The lack of coverage, the lack of news reporting that their activities and then the consequences of their activities could be reported. So those are vulnerabilities and I think challenges for the women. The inability to immediately seek refuge outside for putting themselves on the front line, whether that was the intention or not. I think we need to move away from, was their act of resistance intentionally to get themselves out or not? Yeah. Those are some things that we have to separate. Intentionality, right? Intentionalities, separate them, and I think analyze them in that way. I think those are major challenges, is just in their own security, but also their family security. Those are deep challenges. As far as challenges in the diaspora, I think that what I see is this group of the diaspora that of women who recently left in the last 2 years, their deeply ingrained belief that they still represent women in Afghanistan whole in its entirety. Like, it takes time for diaspora to start dealing with their trauma. And I think the women's groups have mobilized so quickly to be able to be a voice that I think sometimes they don't realize that they have to wonder, they have to question whether they are truly the authentic voice anymore. It doesn't take away from the work that they did being on the front lines during the Republic. It doesn't at all. A lot of them are amazing. But those are the challenges of being in the diaspora.
Sure. In terms of global support, not formal by governments, but in terms of other social movements globally, for example, at the same time, what's going on in Afghanistan, you have a gender apartheid regime in Iran, and Iranian movements are quite proactive, much, much stronger, much, much organized, and they have international support. Biden names woman, Iranian woman in United Nations, but not mentions Afghanistan women. So how do you see global solidarity of other women from Iran, let's say from Arab countries, those who are close to us, Indians, Pakistanis, the West? Of course, the West has larger network of institutions to support and provide platforms. But who are closer to Afghanistan women movement in terms of solidarity and support other than West?
I think there's a very natural regional link between Iran and Afghanistan as far as the women's situation. Iranian women have, I think, live in slightly better condition, but have been living under that for much longer. In the sense that they are allowed to be educated, they are allowed to work, but their social, the constraints in their social lives, and their somewhat, they, I mean, not as much in their political lives, but their social lives are deeply controlled under a surveillance state. And so there are these natural connections. As far as support, global support, I don't see much more than lip service even for Iranian women on the global level outside of the Iranian diaspora. Iranian diaspora are in some ways wealthier than Afghan diaspora, have maybe stronger networks in some ways, and have been able to keep connections with Iran because they've been able to travel more. In the last, since the revolution, and you know, the And so they have those deeper connections than Avons in the diaspora have been able to. But I don't see, I think it's more than lip service when it comes to Western or governments outside of Iran in support of Iranian women. When you talk to the Iranian activists, when you hear them, you hear the frustration. I've been in conferences with many of them, and you hear the frustration that it is a fight they're fighting alone.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. But is there something that the Afghanistan women movement should learn from Iranian experience? As far as you say, they have a longer experience of both suppression and mobilization.
They do, but their conditions haven't been as extreme as what the Taliban have put in place the last 2 years. So it's been extreme in certain ways as far as their social freedoms go and mm-hmm. some of their political freedoms, but they have a lot of their other freedoms
okay.
That Afghan women have not. It's such a different context. And even though there are connections, historical and regional connections, the context is still so different.
That's right.
I think that though, having said that, Afghan women were the ones who created the slogan of not women, life, freedom, but the women, work, bread.
Yeah,
all of that. I think that came before, that preceded women, life, freedom.
That's
but
right.
why did the world, why didn't it take that kind of recognition that that the Iranian slogan took? And I think that again comes to how long the Iranian diaspora has been able to still have reach inside their country, and their society has still been able to maintain itself because of without conflict, but which Afghanistan hasn't been able to keep. I mean, we only had the 20 years of the Republic where the diaspora had access to inside, and Afghans inside had access to others outside.
Yeah.
We only had that 20-year period, whereas Iranians have had, you know, a 40, plus period of that kind of access, despite the limitations on certain women's rights. So people put these side by side and they think they're so similar, but when you dig into the nuances, there are many differences that are present in these societies and the global responses to them.
Yeah, but in terms of learning from these experiences, do you think, despite all these differences, there are positive dimensions that we copy paste or learn, or if not copy paste?
Of course. Of course, because the kind of surveillance state that Iran became is possibly the kind is the Taliban is headed towards. They're going to want to become this surveillance state. They are not as organized or don't have the means to be as organized. But when you watch the movement in Afghanistan, it was, I think, a warning to the Taliban that look at this established regime who's been in power for 40 plus years in Iran, still cannot control the population the way that their Islamic, you know, leadership wants them to, in the form that they want them to. So I thought by looking at Iran, I thought it gave the women inside Afghanistan hope. Look at the longevity of the Iranian government, the income, the structure of their societies, and their population is still resisting. The women still were resisting. And so I think it is a cross educational moment for that, and I think it's a hopeful moment to see in Iran.
Sure. And probably the last question, I just heard you earlier giving a positive note that we are hopeful in terms of succeeding against the Taliban compared to the 90s, given the different circumstances. Now the question is, do you think the current movement, though it is young, though it is inexperienced, probably with so many challenges, will be part of a process which will eventually succeed and play a bigger role?
It's possible, and I think it's going to be slow.
Yeah.
And it's going to be where we will have to See, the thing with resistance is that some resistance is visible, especially to the global north and into the west, the kind of liberal resistance that we recognize. But there's a lot of resistance that occurs in these societies that are not visible. Uh-huh. And we're not seeing all of that. So uh-huh. the visibility of resistance is important through which lens you are looking at resistance. When I talk to women every week in Afghanistan and I ask certain questions about their daily lives, I see resistance in their form, not the kind that I would think through a liberal Western lens would be recognizable. And so when you hear that and you see that, you realize how slow it is, how painful it is, how much suffering there is, but is it still resistance? Yes. And so I'm hopeful that that builds. One of the things that I recognize when I talk to people every week, and certain people I talk every couple of weeks to in Afghanistan, and I'll say, what are you seeing on the streets? And what are you seeing in your interactions with regular Taliban on the streets, right? Most people never meet the leadership, never interact. And the things that I hear are that the population is starting, the educated population in the interactions with regular average people are starting to very slowly change the everyday Talib on the street. That it's not, I think the Taliban thought they were coming in, they were going to change the population. They've changed the conditions of life. But I think that the people who developed and the education that developed during the Republic are starting to change the actions of the daily interactions with the Taliban. To me, that's very hopeful. To me, that is the ultimate kind of resistance, a non-militaristic, elevated society saying, you know, on a day-by-day, case-by-case basis, changing individuals. That's hard on the Western side. We want immediate results, right? We want this. But I see that as hope. And I think that maybe that is our Afghan, the Afghan form of resistance that's long-term. They don't want to destroy their societies, their society, but they want to change it. I find that hope. The 40-something plus interviews we did all over the provinces, you know, you can tell that there's not that much support for the Taliban, but there is support for calm, right? I won't call it peace because it's not peace with so much fear, right? Sure. But there is support for no bombs and no fighting. So that one's hard. That one's really hard. There may come a point where the population will rise up. 2021, in October, I put out a report with Human Rights Watch, with Heather, and that one we looked at Herat, the movement in Herat, which the first protests started out in Herat. Yeah. So I was in touch with the women from Herat who ran those protests. They asked for advice. They asked for, you know, support, but they were also very cognizant about making it seem as if the support was coming from the outside. They were very afraid at the time that the Taliban would see this as an outside-led resistance movement. Okay. So I was very quiet, you know, and I did not share anything on social media or anything because it wasn't to their benefit to make the movement seem as if it was from the outside, because it wasn't. They were contacting me. And so we did that on Herat. You could reach out, you could read that report. We quoted a lot of women anonymously, and I talked to all of them. I interviewed all of them in that report. And then a few months later, I did a similar report about women's conditions and resistance in Ghazni. And then I continued to do in different provinces, and I've kept in touch with the women from different provinces. And my book will have multiple chapters on two chapters about the women's movements after the fall.
Okay, perfect. So please let me know whenever your book is out, hopefully by the end of this year or It will take
I'm
long.
hoping. Oh no, not the end of this year. I'm hoping by summer.
By summer. Okay.
Yeah.
Forward.
Yeah. Well, wonderful to connect with you, Majon. I have your book, and I actually read a couple of the chapters. It's on my list to finish. So, excellent work, and good to be in touch.
Yeah, we'll be in touch. Have a nice day. Bye.
Take care.